It's the 9th of December, and this is Rabbi Manning Shiur.
Today, I would like to deal with a fascinating topic which has many and multiple applications in everyday life, which is the issue of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol, not putting a stumbling block in front of other people. And we'll see what the Pasuk means in a minute. But for starters, I've brought you 11 or 12 questions here, which are not, obviously this is not an exhaustive list. There are many examples that one could bring. For example, handing into a Jewish worker a job, printing, sewing, whatever it is, cleaning, which will be done on Shabbat. You hand it in on Friday and you say, I'm coming on Sunday morning to pick it up. They're a Jewish worker and you know that they're not Shomer Shabbat. Do you have a responsibility for them doing work for you on Shabbat at your request in that sense? A rabbi officiating at a wedding where the couple will not keep Tarat Mishpacha. He is, if you like, giving a hechsher shtempel to a wedding, and he knows full well that the woman will not be going to the mikvah. Is that his achrayot in any way? Does he have any responsibility for making a statement that I don't agree with his wedding, or can he say no? Absolutely, this is a Jewish man, a Jewish woman. We are happy that they get married. Renting out a catering hall for a wedding function where there may be a disco, let's say, and someone might feel uncomfortable with that. Do they have a responsibility to rent out this hall if other people will rent it and have it used for something that they wouldn't want it used for? Selling meat to people during the 9 days who perhaps are not interested in not eating meat during the 9 days because whatever reason, but at least they're keeping kosher. Is that a factor? Okay, you know, it's fine, okay, shvush echalboi, you know. Selling non-kosher meat to non-religious people. What if you're working on a checkout in Sainsbury's or whatever, what they have equivalent in America is, in Walmart or whatever it is, and Jewish people come to buy food and they're putting it through and you're putting the food through for them, is that an issue if they're buying pork and ham and all that? Do you have any responsibility to them at all?
No, it's not, I'll tell them that, and that's not.
Okay, maybe you could tell them that, maybe you should tell them that, we'll see. But let's say they turn around and say, you know something, I don't care, leave me alone, you're not my police. Is that then, have you done your duty, or do you have to sit around and say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to help you buy this food? What about serving food to people, and this is a Shalim Shulchan Aruch that we'll talk about soon, serving food to people who will not make brachot. Somebody says to you, please give me a piece of bread, and they're not going to wash, and they're not going to bench. Benching is a mitzvah min haTorah. You're facilitating somebody eating food and negating a mitzvah min haTorah. Is that your responsibility? What is the downside if you don't give them the food? We'll talk about that as well. Inviting people, this is a classic, who drive on Shabbat to attend a Shabbaton of some kind, an educational Shabbat. They're exactly the people that you want to come to the Shabbat. Exactly. How is that going to work? How do you do that? It's very often you're trying to attract the non-religious people to these events. My wife used to run a conference in London with a number of rabbonim called Encounter. Many years ago they had this conference there, and they had lots of top speakers, and it was aimed at non-religious people. The problem is that most of the people who wanted to come were all the religious people who were thirsting for those same speakers because they never got any of that. So my wife had to undergo a very interesting, she had to put them through a filtering procedure to try and work out if they were from or not. It's very interesting, you know, she was saying to people living in Golders Green, you know, she wear jeans. So, well, you know, if I wear jeans, can I get in? Because, you know, it's always an option. So, you want the people to come to your Shabbat, but they'll drive. Giving directions to a Jewish driver on Shabbat. You're walking through the streets of Tel Aviv, and somebody stops and says, Slicha, eifo makolet, eifo kamyon. And you say, you know, what do you say? Shabbat Shalom. This happened to me, actually, not everything happens in Golders Green, but this happened in Golders Green as well. I was walking up the Golders Green Road once, and a lady drove up, and it was 9 o'clock on Shabbos morning. She could only possibly have been Jewish, because only Jewish people dress like that in a big hat and feathers and all that on Shabbos morning. And she wound down the window and said, can you tell me where Elif Gardens is? Which is the Reform shul down the corner. So, you know, what do I say? Good Shabbos, you know. So I gave her the directions, and we'll see why in a minute. Okay. Actually, at the time, I don't think I knew exactly where it was, which is even more of a problem, because if you don't know where it is, you're going to send them on a wild goose chase. But we'll see. We'll see. I sent them some monks instead, see how they got on. Okay, fine. So, other options. Selling clothes which are not salua, or giving them to friends who are not observant. I have this question a lot from some of my students who maybe are Bali Tshuva, Balot Tshuva. They say, I have a lot of clothes in my cupboard, in my closet, that I really am not comfortable wearing anymore, for either because they're shatnas or because they're not sanua. Can I give them to friends and they'll wear them? Jewish friends. Okay? Hitting a child who may hit back. Forget about the issue of hitting a child generally, is whether that's a good or a bad thing, chinuch wise. I'm not even getting into that discussion at all. But if a child hits the parent back, that's a very serious aveira, and is the parent somehow facilitating that by hitting the child? And of course, selling weapons to people who may use them for murderous purposes. These are obviously questions. Clearly, they're very different kinds of questions. I wouldn't say selling weapons to terrorists is the same as giving food to someone who's not going to make a brocha, but they're both shilas in their own different ways. One of my friends in London was given opportunity to supply marble for the new Hindu temple that they were building, which is a very interesting question. Is he allowed to supply? He's not doing any Avodah Zarah. And is Hinduism even Avodah Zarah? That's a good question, which I'm not getting into now. But does he have any responsibility to not facilitate in some way them doing what they're doing? These are fascinating questions which come up in many, many scenarios. I'm not going to answer every one of those questions, and I'm certainly not giving any psak, but I'd like to take you through the material so that you'll see what the parameters are. Some of it's a little bit technical, but I think you'll get quite a lot out of it. Let's start with the pasuki number one. La tekalel cheresh. Do not curse the deaf. I'm not getting into that now. The lifnei iver loy sitein michshol. Do not put a michshol in front of a blind person. V'yareisim elokecha ani Hashem. Because you have to fear God, because I am God. Now, there are a number of questions that come up in that posuk. First of all, lo titen michshol is a strange use of the word. Do not give a michshol. It should have said lo tasin michshol. Do not place a michshol. Also, why does it say at the end, v'yareitim elokecha? Fear God. I know who's giving these mitzvot. I don't need to be reminded. Sometimes in mitzvahs, Bein Adam L'Chaveru particularly, there is a mention at the end of the mitzvah of God. For example, v'yahavta l'reicha kamocha, Ani Hashem. Why does it do that? And why does it do it here? We'll see that in a few minutes. First of all, let's have a look at Rashi on the Pasuk. V'litnei iver lo yisitin michshol, number two. Immediately he brings the Torah Kohanim, which we're going to see in a few minutes. Lifnei hasuma bedavar. In front of someone who is blind to an issue. Lo yisitin eitzah she'eino hogenet lo. Don't give them advice which is not suitable for them. Altimer, don't say to them, Mechor Sadcha, you should sell your field, and get yourself a donkey. It's now time to invest in donkey. Donkey's real estate is very 20th century. Get yourself donkeys, that's the future. But really what you're doing is it's like a whole scam. You're trying to get hold of his field, the Noklahemani, and take it from him. And you're giving him advice which is not in that person's interests. That is an Issa de Oraita of Litnei Iver Loi Titen Michsha. And we'll see where Rashi gets that from in a second. As far as the last phrase is Konviratim Elokecha, Rashi says an interesting plow, which is worth bringing, even though it's not specific to this issue, it applies to mitzvahs Ben Al Lachavaru generally. He says, Lefisha Hadava Zain Masur Labrios, no one's going to know. No one really knows what your intentions are. Later, imdatu shel zel etoyva olera, meaning you gave this person advice: sell your field, buy donkeys. So he sells his field, buys donkeys, and the donkey market crashes, and the real estate market goes through the roof. And he says, "What did you tell me that for?" So you might say, "Well, look, how did I know? I'm not a novi. I gave you the best advice I could. No one's going to know whether you really meant it l'shem shemaim or not." V'yochel isha mate, you could excuse yourself. The Lyman say, "Letoyven it kavanti. I gave you the best advice I could." Lefikach, therefore, nema bo yireit melakecha hamaki machshvoisecha. Therefore, it says at the end of mitzvot, where only Hakadosh Baruch Hu and you know what was in your mind, says that you can't get away with it. The chen kol davar mosel lelibo, says Rashi, anything which is only in the person's mind shall adam halsei, of the person who does it. The ein shara brias makiros bo, and other people can never really tell. You never know who's a tzaddik and who's not a tzaddik. Ne'emor b'v'yeret b'alakecha. Like the Lubavitcher Rebbe would never, people ask him, is this person religious or not religious? He would say, Chas v'shalom. I don't know who people's neshamas. I can't see into people's, I don't know who is and who isn't. All I can tell you is this, that and the other. Here it's saying also, you can't always tell with people if they are L'shem Shemayim, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. Rashi's source for this is in number 4, which is Sifra. What are these other examples? L'pnei iva loy siten mikhsha. Lifnei suma b'davar, in front of a blind person, as it were. Okay, va'amalecha, above amalecha, he comes and says to you, bak ish ploini mahi lekahuna. Should I marry this girl? Okay, al taima loy kshera. Don't tell her. Don't set someone up on a shidduch that you say is kshera. That he ain't el psuna, but she's a bad shidduch. In this case, because of kahuna, but this goes into shiduchim as well. It's very difficult in shiduchim. People ask you questions, and often the questions are actually very unhelpful questions. Is she a nice girl? I don't know, what does that mean? But even when people ask you specific questions, it's often hard to know exactly how to answer. And whose interest are you working in? Are you thinking of the chosen? Are you thinking of the kala? Are you thinking of both? Are you thinking of you? Are you thinking of the parents? Obviously, some of those are things you shouldn't be thinking of. But it's this issue of lifnei iver is really the one that comes in most when it comes to shidduchim and you're giving advice to people, and that's a whole different conversation, but it's something to be very strongly aware of. Sometimes you have to tell people certain things that they really need to know. Sorry, I got a bit of a cough, but we'll make it through the hour. That is a question. Hayanoita nimcha eitza. He comes to ask you an eitza. Altitilaitza sheno genesa. This is the advanced example of Rashi, and he goes on to give the example of the field and the donkey, etc. And other examples, don't tell people to go on a journey when the journey is not safe, and you know it's not safe. Give the advice that you can give in the best interest of the people. That is the mitzvah. Now the Rambam expands this to the areas that we're looking at mostly today. Have a look at number 5. HaMitzvah HaReish Tzadi Tet. Mitzvah number 299. He Sheziranu Mirit Nahashil Katasna is Katasna. We are not allowed to put stumbling blocks in front of each other for Eitzah in advice. For who? And that is She'im Yishalcha Adam Eitzah B'davar Hu Nifta Boy. If someone asks you an advice on a matter in which you're conflicted, Niftaba means you're somehow nogeya to the matter. The Torah is coming and telling you under no circumstances to mislead them. Avat yashrein, put them on a straight path. Al adava tishtachshu shehu tali v'yashar. V'hu am l'talel ifnei iva tisiz lo titin l'chshar. V'losh v'sivral ifnei suma v'davar hayinotim imcha eitza al titin lo eitza she'enu hagenis. So we've seen that in Rashi, we saw that in the Sifra. However, the Rambam, if you go over the page please, now goes one stage further. And he says the following. V'lav zeh, and this issa also, Amru shehu koil el gam kein mishayazo ala veira. This also includes, on a Doraita level, someone who assists someone in doing an aveira. Or yisalivoytoi, or they give them the circumstances to do the aveira. Kihu yavi ha'ishahu, you are bringing that person. She ivra ta'avatoi, that their taiva has blinded them. Okay, tavat ein sichlo, their seichel has been blinded by their yesahara, because iver, and they are now an iver. Vivatevi azreu lahashlim ever avirasa. The Rambam said an interesting thing. Somebody who wants to do an avera, and the implication of this is even if they want to do it on purpose, and they know what they're doing, they are still an iver on a certain level. They're blind. What are they blind to? They're blind to the context, they're blind to the bigger picture, they're blind to the fact that the Yetzer Hara has enticed them in this way. You cannot help that blind person stumble over the thing that is in front of them, which is their Aveira. You cannot prepare for them or help them to do the Aveira. On this basis, Chazal said, "B'malva, v'loive, b'ribis." If you lend and borrow on interest, two Jewish people are allowed to lend and borrow on interest to each other. Sheshnehem yachad ovrim shem lifnei iver. Not only is the lender doing the avera of lending on interest, And not only is the borrower doing the aveira of borrowing on interest, but the lender is also doing the issa d'oraisa of lifnei iver by causing the borrower to borrow an interest, and vice versa, the borrower is doing the issa of lifnei iver on the lender for causing him to lend on interest. And by the way, we'll see soon, the lawyer is also doing an aveira of lifnei iver by helping both of them to do an aveira. This was an issue for me when I was a lawyer. Every now and then, you get two Jewish clients that want to, and they're not religious, let's say, they don't care about interest, they're happy to have interest provisions. Am I, the lawyer, allowed to draft a contract which provides for these people to do an aveira or not? And we'll deal with that question as it comes up.
Did you say earlier that two Jews can
what, lend on interest?
Yes.
Cannot. They may not lend on interest under normal circumstances. They can structure something with a heter iska and all sorts of ways of doing things. But if it's a straightforward poor rich, I'm poor, you're rich, I lend you money, you pay me back interest, that is an issa d'oraisa. But it's a very complicated situation, and I'm not getting into all the laws of ribis now, for sure not. Anyway, udvarim rabim la'oid, we said. There are many more things than that, he says. From that type, Yon Rubahem, which Chazal said, so the Rambam says that, don't worry, there are many situations in society and life that a person may come across this. Upshita the krab, but the pshat of the pasuk, who b'mashis kanu tchile, is what we said at the beginning. Which is an interesting statement for the Rambam to make at the end. The pshat of the pasuk is, don't give people bad advice. Now that's very interesting. Why isn't the pshat of the pasuk, don't put blocks of concrete in front of blind people, so that if they walk in front of them they'll fall over? That sounds more like the pshat of the pasuk, and yet apparently not. Look in the Minchas Chinuch in number 6. V'hinei midivrei harav hamachaba, he's talking about the Sefer HaChinuch, it seems from the Chinuch, v'chei midivrei harambam, also from the Rambam, nira, it sounds that the pasuk hazeh lifnei ivrei, yatsa lagamri mipshuto. It has no pshat on an obvious literal level. When it says ein yotze mikri with a pshutoi, he says this is an exception. The inotan michshol mamash even lifnei iver eino over. If you take a concrete block and you put it in front of a blind person, you didn't do this aveira. Now, of course, you did many other aveiras. He's not suggesting that it's mutter on any level. Look at number 7 for a second. The Rambam says clearly in Sefer HaMitzvah is in another mitzvah. In fact, the mitzvah before that, mitzvah reish tzarichet, Shizirenu mihaniach hamokshim. I don't think he means literally mines, but you shouldn't put blocks, michshalot, ba'atzasenu, in our countries, or ba'atenu, in our house, kidei shelo yamutu b'hem b'nei adam, that people shouldn't die because we have caused them to stumble physically, literally, for who amru yiteled, but that's the pasuk, loitasim damim b'veisecha. It's a different mitzvah. Loitasim damim b'veisecha. That's the mitzvah sort of ma'akeh around the roof as well, so people don't, God forbid, fall off the roof. So it could be that lifnei iver is actually nothing to do with putting blocks in front of blind people. It's only talking about giving advice or helping people to do aveiras in a situation where, as the Rambam said, the Yetzer Hara has tricked them. In our country, I don't think he's just talking about Eretz Yisrael. The mitzvah of Ma'akir applies in Brooklyn as much as it applies in Yerushalayim. But sometimes it says, for example, in the mitzvah not to neuter an animal. It says in the pasuk uba'atzoi seichem lo tasu kachos, something like that. And the halacha says it doesn't dafka mean Eretz Israel, it means anywhere you happen to live. I think he's using that loshen, etc. Also, there's one of the brachas and the klalas that they give is arur mashge iver baderech. That's also apparently a prohibition of tripping people up and causing people to stumble in a physical way, but our mitzvah here is really talking about the conceptual issue of not giving people bad advice. By the way, this, says the Maharal, is maybe why it says lo titen michshol, not lo tasim michshol. Lotiten, you're giving somebody, what are you giving them? This is an indication that the pasuk is not actually literally about putting blocks in front of them, but giving them advice, which is a nice deal. Have a look at some Gemaras which may inform our understanding of the halacha. I want to bring you 5 Gemarot here, the last of which is the most complicated, which will need a little bit of analysis. Here are some examples of lifnei iver that Chazal bring. Number 9. The Tanya lifnei iver loititin michshol, b'makil ibnai god l'hakosu b'daber. Hitting a grown son. If you hit your son at an age that the son might have the chutzpah to hit you back, so that's an issa d'oraisa of lifnei iver. What is that age? So the Gemara debates, maybe it's 18, maybe it's 22, but like surely no one younger than that would have the chutzpah to hit their parents. Obviously it's not talking about toddlers. If a toddler hits back, that's not called an aveira, the toddler's just being a toddler. It's talking about a person who's a grown person at any age. If, God forbid, the kid may hit the parent, then the parent is certainly not allowed to hit the kid. Whether the child, whether one should ever hit children as a matter of chinuch is a completely separate question, which I'm not even getting into now. Clearly there are different shitos on that in history and even today, but that's not for today. But if the child will hit back, that's lifnei iver. Yes.
Only by saying something or when he does something.
Here he does something. He hits. It's saying or doing something which will cause someone to do an aveir. Absolutely, yes.
Wouldn't it be bar mitzvah age? Because then you consider it.
Yes, in theory, but the Gemara says no kid of bar mitzvah age will ever have the chutzpah to hit back the parent. And that maybe has changed today. Look at number 10. Yes, sorry.
We're dealing in a case of violence. If a son sees his father either abusing his mother or hits him under certain circumstances.
Okay, good. So I'm not getting into that whole discussion now.
There is no, word.
I'm not even going into that territory right now. There are circumstances, obviously, pikuach nefesh, and there's, depending on how you're defining pikuach nefesh, what's going on. I'm not getting into that now, but generally speaking, the child has to be very careful. The child can stop the parents, and the child doesn't have to be abused themselves, but by hitting the parents to stop that, that's problematic and can only be done under very limited circumstances. Okay, fine, you're saying spare the rod, spoil the child. You should hit your children. But, and I'm not suggesting that if, God forbid, the husband is beating the wife, the child shouldn't do anything about it. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying I'm not getting into a discussion about that because the situations are too complex and varied to get into that now. Don't forget that a child hitting a parent is a chiyuv mita. It's a capital offence. So it's not something that one can mess around with. One has to know the circumstances. Have a look at number ten. Englo Ibrim Beloy Tasa, the following people are guilty of breaking this issa, or an issa at least. Hamalver, the lender on interest, Haloiver, the borrower interest, Ha'ore, the guarantor who enables the transaction to take place because he is guaranteeing the loan, the ha'edim, and the witnesses to the loan, even the sofer, the scribe, who again today are the legal professionals, the accountants and the lawyers and the surveyors and all those people who are enabling the transaction to take place. And then it goes on to talk about which isurim they're doing, including lifnei iver, lotif and michshol. Here's another interesting Gemara number 11. Rav Ashi had a leha hu ava. Rav Ashi had a forest. He had a little wood. Zavni lebnei nura, and he sold it to bnei nura. Bnei nura was a sect of avodah zara worshippers that worshipped fire, and they're going to use his wood for avodah zara purposes. Amalei Ravina le Rav Ashi, or they might do it anyway. Ravina turned to Rav Ashi and said to him, "Ha'ikalif ne'iva loisitin mechshol." He said, "Rav Ashi, what are you thinking? They're going to use it for avodah zara. How can you possibly facilitate that?" Amalei, he said back to him, "No, roiv eitzim lahasaka mitzvah. Most people use firewood." For heating. Meaning, the fact that they might possibly use something for avodah zarah is not lifnei iver. There has to be a likelihood there. It can't just be a vague possibility. Who knows what somebody might do? I could sell a pencil to someone and they might use it as a lethal weapon. You can use a pencil as a lethal weapon. But that doesn't mean I can't sell pencils to people, because most people use pencils to write with. So says Rav Ashi, there's a reasonableness test here. There's maybe even a statistical thing that people are not likely to do that aveira. That's a good question. I'm not sure. He's what level? Certainly, Rav Ashi here says Roiv, meaning more than 50%. Roiv means more than 50%. The question is, what if it's even a miyat hamatsui, which is a minority that is a real possibility, even if it's a minority. And I'm not sure of the halacha. For example, when completely different case, when checking for insects, At what point can you turn around and say, this vegetable is very unlikely to have insects, it doesn't require to be checked? It's there, it's not an issue of 49-51. 49% of vegetables are infested. Okay, so it's okay, I won't bother checking. That's not the halacha. Even if it's a mir tamotsui, and there's a big debate as to what that is it 10%, is it less than 10%, one might have to be choshesh, concerned, for the fact that this might happen. In this particular area, I'm not sure what the issue would be, but usually in most cases, it's pretty clear in these shilas. You know, I'm renting out the hall, they're going to have a disco, it's not a maybe, it's going to happen, is that my responsibility? I'm giving this food to this person, they're for sure not going to make a brocha. Usually, in almost all the scenarios, I know exactly what's going to happen, but I'm just pointing out that sometimes you don't know what's going to happen, and how far do you have to be choshesh for tiny possibilities that might happen.
This is sort of like no end. Can I sell a guy a car with
Bible shops? So have a look at number 12, which is the answer to your question. look at number 12. The issue of Ein L'davar Soif is exactly what this raises. The Gemara thought of that already. Levona. What about Levona, which is a kind of spice, which can be used for Avodah Zarah, but may not be. Okay? Says the Gemara, Mikula mochrim lahem chavila. You can sell bundles of this stuff, meaning wholesale. You can be in the wholesale trade for this stuff. The lechush dilma adil umadbin lachrine. He might sell it to somebody else, umakatri, and they may bring katoras with it. Meaning, how far are you going to go? I might sell it to him, but he might sell it to him, and he might sell it to them, and who knows? Says the Gemara, Amaravaya. Alifne mefakdina. We are commanded on lifne iver. Alifne de lifne lo mefakdina. I don't have to start guessing this, after this, maybe that, maybe that, maybe that already you don't have to do. And we'll see in a few minutes, even lifne iver is very restricted to certain cases, which we'll see soon. Rashi says here, kagoyim dehacha, dehai vadai lav la'avodas kachavim kaboy. This person, the wholesaler for sure is not, or the shop is not selling, is buying for avodah zarah, okay? Umishim the loy dizdabin ihu la'achrin, dikitaz alon fakdin al-meis. So you don't have to be worried he's going to sell it to somebody else. So there has to be an immediate effect. It can't be something down the line. And we'll see now the main Gemara, which is the thing that limits Lifnei Iver and actually makes it a fairly a less applicable area than people might think. Have a look at number 13. The Gemara here in Avodah Zarah is dealing with the following Shaila. The Mishnah at the beginning of Avodah Zarah says that you cannot sell an animal to a non-Jew within a certain number of days before their Avodah Zarah festival. Why? What's the problem? So the Gemara asks, Iboy lehu mishum harvacha, is it because of profit? Meaning, this person did a great deal, they bought this cow for a great price, and now they're going to run to their Avodah Zarah at the festival and say, thank you for the deal, you sent me a Jew, sold me a cow at a knockdown price. Is that the problem, that you're going to cause him to thank a god because of what you did? Or maybe the problem is lifneiva. You're giving him an animal that he can bring as a korban, and he's going to do avodah zarah because of you. And they're slightly different isurim. The ma'inaf kamina says the Gemara, why do I care what the problem is? Either way, it's a problem. Either way, I'm causing him to do something which he's not allowed to do. So the Gemara says there is a nafkamina, there is a practical implication between the two cases. The islay behemoth of the day, if he has his own animal already, meaning if he already has his own animal and you sell him another animal, so the implication here is that's not your problem. He already has an animal, he could do avodah zarah without you. But if you sell him another animal and he's going to thank his God, if it's all about thanking, so he'll thank him for a third, a fourth, a fifth, a tenth, and a twentieth. It doesn't matter that he has another animal. If you say it's because of profit, no matter how many animals he has, you've given him a deal. But if you say it's, he has his own animal. So the Gemara says, so what? So if he has his own animal, is that not your problem? Let's finish the source. The Hatanya, didn't we teach a brisa? This is a brisa in Pesachim. Amar Rabbi Nosson, minay shelo yoshid adam koish shel yain lanozir. How do we know that you're not allowed to hand over a cup of wine to a nozir? The Eidim in Achai le Bnei Noach, or a limb from a live animal to Bnei Noach, to a non-Jew who's not allowed to eat an Eidim in Achai. How do I know that I'm not allowed to hand over wine to a Nazir? Talmud Leimer, the Torah says, Lifnei Iveloitit the Nichshol. Now, says the Gemara, presumably, if I'm asked by a Nazir to give him wine, he could get wine somewhere else, and it's still a problem. The hahacha, the kilo yavinon le, surely if I don't give him the wine, shakli ihu ka'av mishum lipne iveloitin nechshol. Meaning the Gemara is here questioning the idea that if he already has an animal, then it's not my problem. Surely the Nazir already has another bottle of wine. He could always get one from the shop down the road, and it still seems to be a problem. The Gemara says, no, that's the point. Hacha b'mayoskinam, what is the case of the Nazir? And this is a famous phrase now. The kai, when they're standing, betray Ibre Nara, two sides of the river. The Gemara makes an ukinta. Two sides of the river is not literal necessarily, but it means, Rashi says, Ovid kachava mitzadzeh, the non-Jew, or the Nazir is on the other side, the Yisra mitzadzeh, and the Jew is on this side. De'i lo yahivle, if you don't give it to him, loy matzi shakel, he won't be able to get it. That's Lifnei Iver. Says the Gemara, V'dai Kanami, you can make a diuk also. You can see from the wording, the Katani lo yoshit. He says, don't hand over. Lo yoshit is with a long arm. The loy Katani, he didn't say lo yiten. Shmamina. What did the Gemara say here? It said basically that Lifnei Iver is only your concern if you are the sole facilitator, if they cannot get it somewhere else. But if they can get it somewhere else, then it's not Lifnei Iver anymore. Because it's not you that's helping them. They could have help from 1,000 different places. So you gave white wine to the Nazir. He has his own glass of wine. So why is that your problem anymore? So he drinks yours. So he drinks his. That's not Lifnei Iver. Because you're not causing the Aveira. He has the Aveira already without you. We'll see that that is indeed the halacha. And the first question that any of the poskim ask when there's a tshuva on these issues of Lifnei Iver, can I rent out my hall for a simcha where there's going to be a disco? So the first question that the tshuva here, Rav Moshe, asked is, are you the only hall in town? Is there another hall down the road? So if he could just go down the road and rent another hall, then that's not going to be Lifnei Iver, because it's not you that's causing the Aveira. The Aveira is available with or without you. Oh, that's not the end of the tshuva. We'll see when we get to the next stage. But that's always the first stage. Can they or can they not get it without you? Here in the case of the Avodah Zarah, the person can get it without you. He has his own donkey, has his own sheep rather. And therefore he can get it without you. Also with a Nazir, if he has it without you, it's not your problem. You had a question before? That's not true. You see, it does. Correct. Good, but it's a sin for you. Good, you're completely right. But it's a sin for you to cause anyone to do an Aveira, Jew or non-Jew. It is if it's an Aveira for a non-Jew. No. A non-Jew in Halacha, a non-Jew is not allowed to do Avodah Zarah. Whether he accepts that or he doesn't accept that is his problem. From my perspective, non-Jews are not allowed to do Avodah Zarah, they're not allowed to murder people, they're not allowed to eat Eidim in Achai, they're not allowed to do any of the Sheva Mitzvahs. Right, so if I'm helping them, correct.
Say, for instance, if you're selling a Christmas tree to Christians.
Okay, so we'll see. The Ramah has a section in Shulchan Aruch when he doesn't talk about Christmas trees, because they didn't have Christmas trees in Poland, I don't think, in those days. But he talks about selling crucifixes to non-Jews, which you might think is even worse than Christmas trees. Because at the end of the day, Christmas trees, how religious really are Christmas trees? If you're a real old-time pagan, my wife used to work many years ago with a woman who was a witch. She was a Wicca witch. I'm serious. She was a Wicca witch. That was her religion. And everyone had to be very respectful in today's politically correct world. She was a witch. She did her shtick, you know, whatever. So if you're selling your Christmas tree to a Wicca witch, then maybe you should ask a Shaila. But the Ramah has a question about crucifixes, and he's going to come on to that. And he's going to actually say this was a big trade for the Jews. Right. And the Ramah says in the many circumstances it's acceptable, and we'll see how that works now. Again, I'm not passing any shilas. Please don't open a crucifix business without asking your local Orthodox rabbi. Yes.
Can I actually do a druid?
A druid can make a shidduch.
Not trees because of the evil spirits.
There's no shortage of interesting people in today's world, yes.
Jeremiah 10, it says that the heathen decorate their trees with silver and gold.
So they had Asherah. There's no question that worshipping trees was part of the ancient pagan religions. No question. Asherah was a big deal. But that doesn't necessarily mean that every Christmas tree today is an Asherah. But, yes.
What happens as a result of your not doing this, let's say, you cause problems on the Jewish community? The non-Jewish person, or whatever it is,
right,
or even the Jewish person.
Oh, good. So we'll get to that.
Decides to take it out. If you don't tell me
good. Good. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. Meaning, what is the downside in not doing it, and are you causing a worse problem by not doing it? We'll get to exactly that point in a few minutes. For now, let's move on, because we have a lot to do. We only have 20 minutes, and this is a big topic. So if they can get it elsewhere, that is not Lifnei Iva, at least on a Torah level. Now, what does that mean, they can get it elsewhere? Does that mean they can get it fairly easily? What if they can only get it by going 50 miles up the road? What if they have to fly to Perth, Australia to get it? Is that still called they could get it elsewhere? That's a whole shaila debated in the poskim. What if they could get it elsewhere, but they get it from another Jew? So what are you achieving by, you know, either way there's going to be Lifnei Iver. Is that also relevant? Again, I put a few notes in English on the bottom of the page 2, which is relevant. But we need to go to the next stage, which is the following. There are two Tosfos, quotes from Tosfos, which bring us to a new level. First of all, on the issue of Avodah Zorah here, and the Nazir, Tosfos says in number 14 the following. Well, the Fiza, therefore, he's talking about non-religious Jewish people who have gone over to Avodah Zorah. Let's say a Jew who became a Christian in his day. This is a big shaila. Are you allowed, for example, they have this question in the Middle Ages, a Jew who converts to Christianity, are you allowed to lend him money on interest? Or is he still Jewish? Is a Jew a Jew a Jew? Or does there come a point at which even a Jewish person effectively leaves the Jewish community and becomes effectively a non-Jewish person for these halachas? So let's have a look at what he says. Well, Lefiza, according to this, Asur lahoshit lumumarim la'avodet kachavim dava isu. You're not allowed to give non-kosher food, let's say, even to a Jew who's converted to Christianity. You can't give them pork, they are still Jewish. Afal pi shehu shelahem, even if the pork belongs to them. Meaning if they say, pass my piece of pork to me, you have to refuse. Ki hadava yadua, because you know full well, shiachlu, that they're going to eat it. It's not maybe yes, maybe no. Yes?
Israel.
Afal pi shechata. Correct. Israel, Afa Pisha Fata, Israel, who? Where do we learn that principle? We learn that principle with Achan, with Yahshua, where Achan takes from the booty of Ai, okay, and he hides it, yeah. And God says to Yahshua, Chata Israel, not Yisrael Chata. Chata Yisrael, sinned have the Jews. Yisrael, afal pisha chata, Yisrael. So it's chata Yisrael, there's still a Yisrael after the chait. So the Tosfos says you can't pass him the meat. They are completely Jewish for all respect in terms of eating kosher. But, says the Tosfos of Meiri, of course that's only the case. But if he can't get his own pork, meaning if he could pay, take his own pork, and he says to you, pass it, then you can do what you like. In lo yoshiv loy. Meaning, Lifnei Iver is only when they can't get it without you. And Tosfos says straight, like we just saw in the Gemara, if they can get it without you, then it's just not your concern anymore. It's not Lifnei Iver. If they need you, it's Lifnei Iver. If the guy Nebach is paralyzed, he needs you to feed him. You can't feed him. But if it's sitting there and they say, just pass me this, would you? And he could just reach and get it himself, so fine. So what did you achieve by saying no, he's going to take it anyway? That's not Lifnei Iver. So he passes apparently like the Gemara there with no further comment. However, in the next Tosfos, he adds something else. And we have to work out what is the difference between the two. Did you have a question? You have a question? No. Look at number 15. Number 15 is dealing with a different scenario in Hilchos Shabbos. The Gemara at the beginning of Shabbos deals with a number of different scenarios of people carrying on Shabbat. and there's someone standing inside the house, and there's someone standing outside the house. And if you've learned the Mishnayot at the beginning of Shabbat, it goes through all the different scenarios. I take a cup of water and put it outside, so I'm carrying from inside to outside. He takes a cup of water, puts it inside. All the different scenarios. So one of the scenarios is the following. That I've got my hand open like this, okay, and the person standing outside picks up a glass of water, puts it in my hand, and I just stand there, and he does all the carrying, outside, inside, and I just stand there passively. And that, the Gemara says, is mutter. I didn't do anything. I'm standing inside the house with my hand out, and the other person carried and put something into my hand. He picked it up, he put it down. So that's mutter. Tosfos says, how can that be mutter? Okay, Hilchos Shabbos, maybe it's mutter. I didn't do anything. But what happened to Lifnei Iver? I'm standing there when the guy is breaking Shabbos in front of my face. Is that okay? So look at Tosfos number 15. The Im Taimer, if you want to say, V'haka'ava Lifnei Iver, lo yisite michshol, isn't he breaking Lifnei Iver by watching this person break Shabbos? Says Tosfos, Afilu Mayashe Hayo Yochel Litloi, and even if you say that he could have done it without you, he didn't need you. And therefore, it's not that technical situation of two sides of the river, and it's not your concern. Afilu loy haya biyadu, the loy ava mishum lifnei iver. You're going to tell me he's not doing the isser of lifnei iver because he could do it without you. And he gives the example: the Moshe kos yain lenazi, moikil abe peri kamad b'sechad zavadis kachavim, the kai betray of his naru. But the case of the nazi was only when he couldn't do it without you. Even so, says Tosis, mikol makom. And this is stage 2 of the analysis. Issa d'rabbonon miha ikka. There is still an issa d'rabbonon. Of what? Shechayiv lahafrisho mi issa. You have to stop other people doing issurim. Now, this is stage 2. Meaning, even if you've established that it's not lifnei iver, why? He could do it without me. He didn't need me. He could rent another hall. He could go to another rabbi and get married. He could do whatever that you're asking me to do, which sounds very difficult. He could do it without me. So it's not lifnei iver. So it's not my concern. So Tosfos says, yes, but stage 2 is you have a mitzvah to stop them from doing averas. Okay, you're not doing an avera of facilitating, but you can't stand there while people do averas. This could be from the mitzvah tochacha, which we haven't talked about really yet in this scenario, but or this could be a drabon level of lifnei iver, but you can't stand by while other people are doing averas. So that's always going to be the next stage of the argument, which is, okay, you're off the hook for lifnei iver. They could get it somewhere else. But don't you have to say something? Let's give the scenario of the person's at the checkout, and there's a person bringing, I don't know, pork and ham and whatever down the checkout. And you're a Jewish person, and this other person's a Jewish person. Do you have a mitzvah doraisa or an issa doraisa of lifnei iver by putting their food through the till? Yes or no? And the answer is no, because even if you don't do it, they'll just go to till number 6 and they'll do it there. There's no, you're not in any sense facilitating this avera, and without you they can't get it. But the question still remains, but what about this next level? Do you have to say something, like you were going to say, this is kosher, this is not kosher? Do you have to give them some kind of tochacha? Do you have to make a stand on some level and object? Yes.
What about a nurse, or in a hospital or a nursing home, that has to feed the patient who has a stroke or something?
Right.
Would that be...
Feed them non-kosher food?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, maybe allow them to eat non-kosher food in certain circumstances.
That's the question, I didn't get it.
If a person is in a nursing home, let's say, and they're having to, in a non-Jewish nursing home, and there are Jewish residents there, and they're serving them non-kosher food, and they're having to serve them directly, and they're feeding them directly non-kosher food, that could well be a shaila if they're not allowed to eat the food. Depending on how sick they are, they may be allowed to eat the food.
What's the question? Because a Jewish nurse
is putting non-kosher food into a Jewish person's mouth.
She does it a non-kosher person.
Right, so she's going to say it's not lifnei iver, because if you don't do it, someone else will do it. Right, but the question is,
they serve non-kosher food.
It says it's a non-Jewish nursing home. It's a non-Jewish nursing home. So lifnei iver, maybe it's not, but do you have still an obligation to say something? So, yes.
How about the Haredim who stand outside movie theaters on Shabbos and say, shut down the movie theater?
Okay, I didn't think it has anything to do with lifnei iver. I think that's to do with making a public statement about the importance of Shabbos. And whether they feel they'll achieve anything or not achieve anything. You have to ask them what their kavana is. I'm not sure they're trying to prevent anyone from doing an avera. I think they're trying to make a public statement that Shabbat is important in this country, and public observance observance of Shabbat is on the agenda. Whether they're right, whether they're wrong, their methods I'm not even getting into, but I actually don't think they're worried about the Avera. And what is the Avera? You're going to walk into a cinema and you're going to sit and watch a movie. Halavai, I'm not saying that's allowed on Shabbos, but I'm saying, you know, halavai, that was the worst thing that anyone ever did on Shabbos. I don't think they're thinking in that kind of very technical way. I think it's more of a global issue. But I can't speak for them. You have to ask them. Maybe Lifnei Iver is very much on their agenda. Yes.
What about the age-old problem of inviting families?
So let's get to that now. Let's get to that now. I need to go on because I have 10 minutes and it's a big topic, and I'm certainly not intending on taking you over time. The Shulchan Aruch paskens the following way. Number 16. You know that there's a certain avodah zarah, sheba oisa makah. You can't sell that avodah zarah to those people who use it for avodah zarah, sheba oisa makah. In that place, straight, you can't sell it. Finish. If you are asked by a non-Jewish person who does avodah zarah, you can't in any way facilitate and help them do that avodah zarah. But the remark comes in and says, like we saw in the Gemara in avodah zarah, v'hada asal in kolam dvarim hashayichim l'avodah sam. When it says that you're not allowed to sell them things for their avodah, haynu dafke im eilahem achirim. That's only if they can't get it anywhere else. Kiyot ziva or shelo yuchlu liknos b'macham acher. They can't buy it somewhere else. There's no other place that they can buy a crucifix. Leaving aside whether Christianity is or isn't avodah zarah, and leaving aside whether a crucifix is or isn't part of an avodah for avodah zarah, which are two separate questions, if there are 16 shops selling crucifixes down the road, and so Chaim Yankel's found a way of getting them cheap and selling them at a discount, so maybe that's okay, he says. Aval, im yicholim liknot b'makam achar, if they can get them somewhere else, mutalim kol lahem kol davar, you can sell whatever you like. V'yesh machmirim, but there are those who say no, like there's a mitzvah to give people tochacha, even if they can't get it somewhere else. V'nahagu lahakel kesvara rishona, but the minhag is to be lenient, like the first opinion. V'kol bal nefesh yachmer atzmo, but if you want to be frum, you should be machmer. It's back and forth between the two opinions. What is the bal nefesh? Someone who wants to be like careful about themselves, they should be machmer. When are the two cases applicable? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. So I'm not going to have time to get into it now in great detail, but the Shach and the Degel Merava, classic commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, debate when is it that you have to intervene even if there isn't Lifnei Iver. Meaning, if there is real Lifnei Iver, they couldn't do it without you, then you've got a problem. And some of the cases I cited at the beginning may be a problem. If I cross the road in Tel Aviv on Shabbos, and the guy puts his brakes on to stop for me, then why is that not Lifnei Iver? I am facilitating him doing specifically an Aveira right here, right now, putting the brakes on Shabbos, and he wouldn't do that if not for me. I'm not sure why that is not Lifnei Iver, because there's no one else involved in the equation. So maybe you would have to wait till there are no cars there, etc., or cross when there's already a green man flashing and they've stopped already. But if you're causing them to stop, I'm not sure why that's allowed. What's the problem? Yeah, but every single, there's not one issa of driving on Shabbos. Every single time they put the foot on the gas, every time you put your foot on the brakes, that's another chilul Shabbos. That's why driving a car is probably the best way to break Shabbos in the most possible way you can, is by driving a car. Every single movement is almost the chilul Shabbos. Pekuach nefesh. Once you're already standing in the road, fine. So he's allowed. Good. So you're going to say I'm allowed to walk in front of the car because now he's allowed to break Shabbos for pekuach nefesh. I like the svara, but I'm not sure that you should cause the situation.
You're going to answer the original question.
Yes, if I get the time, which I'm going to do now. So the shach, and the degel mervava. And some of the answers are coming up now. The Shach and the Degel Mervava make an interesting distinction. For example, the Shach says that the difference is between a Jew who is religious and a Jew who is not religious. A mumar and a non-mumar. Meaning, he says, if it's Lifnei Iver Doraisa, then it doesn't matter whether they're Jewish or even not Jewish. I can't do it. And that's what Tosfos says. I can't give pork to a person who's, even if they've converted to Christianity. But if it's not Lifnei Iver, do I have an obligation to intervene? So the Shach wants to say, only if the person is bothered. If the person is not bothered, then I don't have to intervene. So the Shach's understanding would be, if the person's coming down the aisle saying, you know, I don't keep kosher, and therefore I couldn't care less what you tell me, therefore you'll be allowed to put the stuff through, and that wouldn't be your problem, it's not Lifnei Ivei, because they can go somewhere else, and they're not bothered, and therefore I don't have an obligation to give them tochacha anyway. But someone who is bothered, someone who is a Jew who is concerned, you would have an obligation. The Degel Mervava doesn't like that, because the Degel Mervava says, look, a Jew is a Jew is a Jew. Whether they're bothered, whether they're not bothered, you should still have an obligation to help them. Good.
They were bothered, why would they be
good? So you're just reinforcing the fact that they found it. Maybe they didn't know. And that's the Degel Mervava's point. Uh-huh. The Degel Mervava's point is, what if they were beshogeg? Meaning, if they're bemazed, he wants to say, then you don't have this extra obligation of tochacha. But if they're beshogeg, of course you do. Like your point, did you know that this is kosher? Yes, or not kosher. Yes, I know and I don't care. Okay, fine. Okay, maybe that will be okay. So if you apply those in the situations that we're looking at, so in this particular scenario, for example, handing into a Jewish worker a job where the work will be done on Shabbat. So again, the analysis will be, would they be breaking Shabbat in some other way without you? Meaning, are you the cause of them breaking Shabbat or not? The answer might be yes, you are, in which case it's definitely a problem. But if they'd be breaking Shabbat anyway on this particular issue, then the question is going to be whether they are, according to the Shach, you know, religiously concerned or not, and according to the Ibn Rava, are amazed or not. The big question that we're going to have, though, is when it comes to non-religious people in today's world, the categories don't fit in the same way that they did at the time of the Shach. At the time of the Shach, 400 years ago, people who were not religious had basically left the Jewish people. They knew what they were doing, and they decided they're not interested. Today, that is clearly not the case. Today, most non-religious people are not religious through a lack of exposure or education to religious matters, not through any kind of conscious rejection of anything. And even if people technically know that this is what religious people do or don't do on Shabbat, they don't really usually understand how that might relate to them or how that works in any kind of detailed way. And therefore, it's very difficult to know really whether anybody is amazed today. Amazed meaning they're doing things on purpose. Maybe everybody is a shogeg. In which case you wouldn't be allowed to help anybody in these areas because you would have an active obligation to intervene. Because how can you class them, number one, as a mummer? A mummer is someone who's consciously rejected Judaism. Very few people are in that category today. And secondly, even to classify people as amazed, you have to have quite a high level of awareness to be amazed. The Rambam says, even if someone breaks Shabbos knowing that they're not allowed to do this on Shabbos, but they don't realize it's chayav kares, that's still not amazed. So it's quite a high bar. So all of the things I've seen so far are still going to make it very difficult for me to help other people to do Averis. Because even if it's not Lifnei Iver, because they can get it somewhere else, so they're not a Mazid and they're not a Mumara, and therefore maybe I have to intervene on some level. So the answer to the question really comes in the last couple of sources. And this is what I want to introduce to you now. The Shulchan Aruch has an interesting shaila. Look at number 19, I'm still on page 3. The Shulchan Aruch has an interesting shaila which really raises the question that you were saying before. Isha eina b'mitzvah hakafa. What's this talking about? Cutting the sides of somebody's hair. A man is not allowed to cut the sides of his hair. Okay? With or without a razor, even with scissors to cut off his hair under the payas. But a woman is. If you want to shave off your whole head with a razor and you're a woman, babakasha. Okay? I'm not suggesting it's stylish, but there's no issa d'oraisa. It's only with a man. So, the shaila is, what if a man goes to a woman and asks her to shave off his hair? What is the issa there? She's not even in part of that issa, but he is. The Yesh Omrim, there is an opinion, Sha'af al pisha muterit lahakit peyat rosha, even though she's allowed to shave her hair off, asura lahakit peyat rosha ish, she's not allowed to shave his hair off. Why not? Why is she not allowed to shave off his hair? He comes to the barber, she's a lady, leaving aside shomenegi issues, I'm not getting into that now, she's going to shave off his hair. What's her problem? She's not part of that list. Good. So she's has shaliach in some way. Ain't shaliach l'dvar avera, we paskin. So I'm not a shaliach for avera, but maybe it's lifnei iver. I am helping him to shave off his head, and he's not allowed to do that. Comes along the Rebbe Kiva Eger and says an amazing thing. Number 20. Ulai yesh loimar. I want to suggest, he says, the bezer leke iser midin mitzvah lahafrisho. There is no mitzvah to separate him from an avera. Meaning lifnei iver, it's not. Because he can go to some other barber and get his hair shaved off. But what about, I want to help him not to do an Aveira? He says an interesting thing. It's not a problem if she shaves his hair off, maybe. The Adrabba, on the contrary. The Mashehima Galechet Ota, by her shaving off his hair, Bezer Mafrishayu, she's actually helping him. Why? The Imloy Haitama Galechet Ota, because if she doesn't shave off his hair, he'll shave his own hair off. Hayama Galechet Smo, he'll shave his own hair off. But Haya Oiva Babeslav, and then he's going to be doing two Aveiras. The Nikaf of the shaver and the Makif of the shavee and the Makif and the shaver. Meaning, look at what he says. He says, you know, sometimes by helping somebody to do an Aveira, you're actually saving them from doing a bigger Aveira. How can you call that litmeiver? You're helping them. Next terms, you're helping them. He raises this question, and based on this question, really, is what you were saying before. Rav Shlomo Zalman was asked the following question: somebody came into the yeshiva, non-religious person, and he brought out food and drink, piece of cake, piece of a glass of water, and he drank in no brachas. The Bokhrin came up to Rosh Hashanah Zaman and said, I don't understand, Rebbe, it's in the Shulchan Aruch Mufurash. It says you cannot give food to people who won't make brachas. It's clear. Why? How are we allowed to do this? So he said, look, litnei iver, it's not. Because with or without me, he's going to get hold of the food and he's going to make brachas. It's litnei iver, not litnei iver. So do I have an obligation to stop him from doing aveiras? The answer is like this. If he comes to our yeshiva in the middle of the summer, and we give him nothing to eat and nothing to drink, and he walks out of the yeshiva thinking, this is what frum people do. The most basic thing is they give you a glass of water, they won't give me a glass of water. The net result of us not giving him a piece of food will be much worse than the net result of us yes giving him a piece of food. Better he should not make a bracha than he should walk out of here hating religious Judaism, etc., because currently the guy's positive. That's an interesting cheshbon. And you end up with that whole question as follows. Meaning, if I invite people on Shabbat to my house and they decide they're going to drive, okay? Now, if I feel that there may be a significant positive benefit from them coming to my house on Shabbat because it's a Shabbaton or whatever it is, there's a program, and if, let's say, we were to imagine this, then a Shomer were to ask a Shailin Shamayim, what's better, that I should stay at home all day and not drive the car, or I should drive the car to this person and maybe one day this will connect me very significantly with something very positive and Jewish? So what's the answer to that question? So Rav Berkowitz always told us, and he still says, that if there is a real likelihood that the person, or not a real likelihood, because you never know, but if there is a possibility significant that the person may be very positively affected, then you can invite them even though you know they're going to drive on Shabbat. Now, not everybody agrees with that. Rav Moshe Feinstein, I brought you at the end of the sheet, brought down a very interesting thing. He said he thinks that's a mesit. A mesit is someone who actively entices someone to drive on Shabbat or to do an Aveira. And he actually said that was prohibited. He clearly said that was prohibited. And the person has to give people opportunities. You could stay with us, etc., etc. That's also a possibility. But others say no. Based on this Rabbi Kiva Eger, if the net result of what he's doing is actually potentially positive, then maybe in terms of lifnei iver, then that's not my problem anymore. On the contrary, I'm helping the person, like the woman shaving their hair. Just 1 second, because I only have a minute, I need to finish. Of course, that's not always the case. If someone's coming to your house for Shabbos and you feel there's no possibility that they're ever going to be affected in any possible way, so where's the heter? So then you're going to have to get into, you have to offer them a place, and they have to, you know, and then it's a bit awkward and difficult, but maybe you have to get into that whole discussion. There is one last point, which is a question on the last page, which I'm not going to get into inside, which is, let's say it is an Aveira of lifnei iver on some level. Are you ever allowed to do an Aveira to help someone else do a mitzvah? And the answer to that question is, sometimes. Sometimes. And the question came up The question came up in the Middle Ages, which was a little girl was abducted on Shabbat, Lo Aleinu, by the church. And the father had a shaila. Am I allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos to get the girl back? Yes. I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to bribe the authorities. I'm going to have to break Shabbos on many levels. There's no pikuach nefesh because this little girl will not be harmed. On the contrary, she may be happier, not happier, but she may be healthier living as a Christian than as a Jew.
Go on Sunday.
He can't, it's too late. By Sunday morning, they're already taking her away. She'll be already on the road, he'll never find her again. Is he allowed to go to break Shabbos to prevent that girl in the future becoming a Christian? And the initial answer to that shaila that was put in the Middle Ages was no. And the Shulchan Aruch rules against that. And he says yes. Because he brings down a different shita and he says yes, and the understanding is you're allowed to do a lesser avera to help somebody else do a bigger mitzvah on two conditions, he says. And the Mishnah Berurah at the back brings this down. Number one, that what you're saving them from is much bigger than what you're doing in order to save them. And number two, that what they are potentially doing is not their fault. Okay? They're not doing it willingly, but it's against their will on some level, which clearly is the case with this little girl. But that's also a factor which I can't get into now, which may be something that needs to be thought about as to when I'm doing something to help someone else, if I'm saving them on some level from something big, then that may be a factor. I don't want to hold you now, it's 11:15. There's probably two shiurim worth of material here, not one. But that at least gives us a taster on this issue.